This recording is produced by the Christian Church of God, Grand Junction, Colorado. Please visit our website at ccofgod.org.
Well, I suspect you've been watching the news lately. Who hasn't? And a notable official from the United States has been abroad, and the statement was made abroad that the United States is not a Christian nation, provoking predictable reactions in the media, some of one persuasion and others of another. No doubt you have an opinion on that yourself, but today I'd like to take a different angle on that question and look at it from a different perspective, because technically there is one answer, and really there's another. And the thing of it is, what does it have to do with us? Because it has a lot more than you might think. Is this a Christian nation? We want to say yes. We should say yes. It was certainly founded on Christian principles. But the world has changed. This is not the same world of a couple hundred years ago. It isn't the same world of 50 years ago. There have been some dramatic differences. In Jeremiah chapter 30, verse 7, it talks about a time of Jacob's trouble. And of course, knowing who Jacob is, we can begin to see the relevance of that particular passage that the world might not recognize. And we have to wonder, are we right now entering that time? Is this the time of Jacob's trouble? It seems that it is. It seems that that's where we're headed. Our fundamental institutions in this country have changed dramatically. Their thinking, their orientation, their agendas is very different than it used to be. Leftists have taken over the political agenda in this country, and they're oriented to a secularism. We hear a lot about political correctness. We can't even call terrorists, or we're not supposed to call terrorists, what they are anymore. We've seen the destruction of our freedoms in an unprecedented degree, some of it sacrificed to the pursuit of security, but nevertheless, many of our basic fundamental freedoms have been lost. We don't necessarily realize how much they've been lost, but we will someday when something happens. We've seen inserted into our culture things called rights of things that aren't even right in the first place. Morally, they're not right, but we're called a right. And those so-called rights are further negating our freedoms. There is becoming open persecution of religion. And if not persecution, certainly open contempt of the Judeo-Christian ethic as it is in our society. Politics is fully dedicated to the abortion agenda, which requires and increasingly is requiring the suppression of religious conscience. Healthcare providers are not going to be allowed if what is being reported takes its full course. People of conscience are not going to be allowed to act on their conscience. They're going to have to perform services to those who provide abortions. And then we see our government leaders going abroad, seeking to make our enemies like us, by kowtowing, by prostrating ourselves to their opinions. In Jeremiah chapter 3, there's a comment about that approach to things. And wouldn't you know, it would be the peoples of Israel who would tend to do that. Foreign nations know better somehow, but our people, it seems they don't. But Jeremiah chapter 3, the first 5 verses. They say, if a man put away his wife and she go from him and become another man's, shall he return unto her again? Shall not that land be greatly polluted? But speaking to the peoples of that land, you have played the harlot with many lovers, yet return again to me, saith the Lord. We're oriented to the opinions of other nations. We don't care what God thinks. That's the point that he's trying to make here. Lift up your eyes unto the high places and see where you have not been lain with. In other words, we've committed these adulteries everywhere before God. In the ways has you sat for them, as the Arabian in the wilderness, and thou hast polluted the land with thy whoredoms and with thy wickedness. Therefore the showers have been withholden, and there has been no latter rain, and you have the forehead. You refuse to be ashamed. Will you not from this time cry unto me, my father, you art the guide of my youth? Will he reserve his anger forever? Will he keep it to the end? Behold, you have spoken and done evil things as you could. The point here, our people are committing fornication with other nations. We're forgetting the fact that our blessings come from God. And he is saying here, there's going to be a day of reckoning. Then we have another contingent of people, and this is particularly relevant to the last days, that we find in Daniel chapter 11. And it's referred to a number of times. And I've spoken on this in the past, but I just want to touch on it again just to put a perspective on our question today. Daniel 11, verse 28, for example. And here is an end time power that is basically controlling the world at that point in time. And it says of this person, he shall return unto the land with great riches, and his heart shall be against the holy covenant. And he shall do exploits and return to his own land. Down to verse 30. For the ships of Chittim shall come against him, therefore he shall be grieved and return and have indignation against the holy covenant. So shall he do, and he shall even return and have intelligence with them that forsake the holy covenant. What's that talking about? Down to verse 32. And such as do wickedly against the covenant shall he corrupt by flatteries. But the people that do know their God shall be strong and do exploits. Keep the latter part of that verse in your mind as we address our question today. The gist that we can get from this is that there is going to be an intent, and there is going to be a political polarization. And then there is going to be a campaign, and you can see that in the progression of those three verses. There's going to be a campaign against those people who uphold the covenant. What does that amount to? What is that talking about? That's what we need to understand. There is going to be a sentiment in the world that is going to be against what God calls the holy covenant. Are we seeing that in what we're seeing happening in our nation today? Then, of course, we have the economy. Horribly corrupt. How did so many major corporations get so debt-ridden so fast? Massive billions of dollars are being thrown at them to keep them up, which tells us that they were in tough shape beforehand. But nobody said anything about it. There was no warning of this coming. Those who knew kept quiet, and they kept doing business as usual until the stuff hit the fan. How did so many major corporations get into this predicament? It will be showing more and more, but we're going to find out that there are international conspiracies behind what is going on economically in the United States. There is a plan to diminish the strength and even perhaps the existence of the United States dollar. And there's a military objective in that. When they destroy the United States economic strength, they negate our ability to be a policeman in the world or to affect world events. That gives someone else the ability. There's that scripture in Revelation where the whore brags, who was able to make war with her? It's not only a military superiority on her part, but it's probably that entity is probably the only economic powerhouse in the world at that point in time. You can't wage war without massive amounts of money. If there's anything we've learned in the last 10 years, certainly that. They talk about taxing our children's future. We're robbing from our children and our grandchildren. I've got some news for you. I don't believe it's going to get that far. I think the piper is going to be paid even in our generation, old as most of us are. It's another pipe dream that this is going to go on to our children's time. I kind of doubt it. And then, of course, we have the news media. All of our major institutions, consider them, our news media, they're thoroughly infected with leftist thinking. Stuff that we would have recognized in the 50s as pure, rank communism. But it's coming through our news media all the time. The truth is not their interest area. It's not what they're after. They have an agenda. They're an arm of the political leftist forces. There's no way to get around it. Our entertainment media, what are they doing to this nation? Well, one thing for sure, they promote pornography virtually in every way they can get away with. And they're always pushing the envelope. Violence. It's incredible. You watch some of these History Channel things that talk about our major cities. I forget the name of the series, but it shows the crime element, the gangs that exist in so many of our major cities. And it's even getting down into the smaller towns. The entertainment media promotes immorality of all sorts. And, of course, the open promotion of the homosexual agenda. Well, wouldn't education fix that if people only knew the truth? Well, our educational institutions, they're corrupted with things that aren't truth, science that isn't true. They're corrupted with evolutionary bias. And you can't not teach it. In any grade level, and especially higher education, you cannot not teach evolution. And our educational institutions themselves are filled with immorality. They promote a situation ethics, which is another form or another way of conveying all kinds of immorality. They're contemptuous of our national heritage. What schools anymore teach American history truthfully? It isn't done. And they will not teach or allow to be taught or even to investigate the true histories of our peoples. We call ourselves Caucasians and we forget to make the connection. Where are the Caucasus mountains? And how did those people get there? Don't want to know. Can't teach it. I happen to bring a couple of copies of the National Geographic magazine, and this is always amusing to read. Wonderful science in some of these, but at the same time, these people are thoroughly infected with the evolutionary ideas. But they've also bought heavily into this global warming stuff. Article in this particular issue, June 2007, The Big Thaw, Ice on the Run, Seas on the Rise. And they're talking about how that the oceans, if the ice melts, the oceans are going to rise as much as 15 to 20 feet higher. This is printed in a prestigious magazine. Did anyone ever do the math on that? Number one, and the news media is not reporting this, but most global warming is the evidence of it is being found in the northern hemisphere, not the southern. But did you ever take and put a big ice cube in a glass and fill that glass right up to the brim with water and then watch that ice cube melt and see how much water is going to flow over the rim? Do you know how much will? I learned this in third grade, but they don't teach it anymore. You know how much is going to go over the rim when that ice, big floating ice cube melts? Not a drop. You know why? Because the ice is already displacing the weight of the water equal to its own weight. And as that ice melts, it shrinks down to the lower volume, and you don't lose a drop. Floating ice, when it melts, does not raise the oceans. And here they are teaching that stuff, when basic, simple science would say, that's bogus. Do you know how much water it would take to raise the oceans? Two-thirds of the Earth's surface is oceans. Do you know how much it would take to raise the oceans 15 or 20 feet? The ice on the poles would have to be about 80 miles thick. Now, another problem is, and I said this is happening basically in the so-called warming or the evidence of glacial melt is occurring more mostly in the northern hemisphere. Lovely little map right here in their same publication, facing page to that other comment that I just read, shows that the entire North Pole, with the exception of Greenland, is floating ice. The North Pole is floating. If the North Pole were to melt completely away, you hardly would see an eighth of an inch difference in the ocean levels. And how do you even measure such a thing? Right in their own magazine, they're admitting, and here's a little blurb underneath this map, floating sea ice, also dwindling, does not affect sea level. So why are they across the page saying it's going to raise the oceans 15 to 20 feet? Go figure. They should know. Here's another one. This is a beauty. This one is published August 2005. Article entitled, Hurricane Warning. Remember Katrina? This is after Katrina. In Hot Water is the lead title of this article. Last year was no fluke. The mighty Atlantic conveyor belt is in high gear and sea surface temperatures are up. That means we could be in for decades of coast-crushing hurricanes. Problem is, since this article was published, there was only one destructive hurricane that hit the U.S. coast in 2005 was the year. And that was it. Their prophecy, and that's further on this article here, talking about global warming is going to send us massive numbers of hurricanes because of the ocean temperature between Florida and North Africa. They're predicting continual series of massive hurricanes. We should watch, we need to be aware of it, we need to be warned. And yet, on the same page, they show a graph showing that the first 6 years of the 1950s, sea temperatures in that region were warmer than they are today. Is the early 1950s, 51 through 56, known for massive hurricanes? It shows it dramatic. The chart, it shows it dramatically warmer than the last 10 years. But their prediction, be based on sea temperature and sea temperature alone, didn't prove true. According to their models, according to their theories, we should have had massive hurricanes in the last 10 years, and we haven't since Katrina. And 1 year later, 2004 was a bad year. That was the year that three hurricanes hit the west coast of the Florida Panhandle in a row. But since then, there's only been one. But all the models say it should be different. My point is, these people in the vanguard of scientific awareness are hooked on stuff that's bogus. Our fundamental institutions in this country are bogus. Even our religions, most of them, and most of the ones that we would tend to favor, are corrupted with Gnosticism and Mithraism. Look up the Mithraic cult sometimes. You'd be very surprised at the similarities. And which of modern day religions is not biased against the laws of God? There are some evangelicals who would try to convince you that it's even an insult to God if you try to keep His laws. It's a violation of the auspices of grace. You fool, you think you need to keep God's law? That's what much of our religion teaches. And of course, like the educational community, like academia, they will not accept the identities of our national origins. They will not hear of it. They will not have it. There's a basic reason for this, and it doesn't affect just religion. It affects all of our basic institutions, our government, our educational system, our media, our entertainment. All of it has a particular bias, a particular slant, and we can read about that in Romans chapter 1. The Apostle Paul in his day was very insightful as to the basic component of human nature, and it hasn't changed one bit. Now keep in mind, we're addressing ourselves to the question, is this a Christian nation? Because politically we would want to incline towards one answer. But really, as Christians, we might be afraid but reluctantly forced to admit another. But in chapter 1 of Romans, Paul, a servant of Jesus Christ, called to be an apostle, separated unto the gospel of God, which he had promised before by his prophets in the Holy Scriptures, concerning his Son Jesus Christ our Lord, which was made of the seed of David according to the flesh, and to declared to be the Son of God with power according to the Spirit of holiness by the resurrection from the dead, by whom we have received grace and apostleship for obedience to the faith among all nations for his name. Down to verse number 9. For God is my witness, whom I serve with my spirit in the gospel of his Son, that without ceasing I make mention of you always in my prayers. Paul is focusing on those people to whom he is writing for a particular reason. Making request, if by any means now at length I might have a prosperous journey by the will of God to come unto you. For I long to see you, that I may impart unto you some spiritual gift, to the end you may be established. And if you could hold those three verses in your mind, I'm going to come back to them at least in thought, if not in actual reference. The strength of this particular group of people is important for a reason. Verse 13. Now, I would not have you ignorant, brethren, that oftentimes I purposed to come unto you, but was prevented previously, that I might have some fruit among you also, even as among other Gentiles. Let's drop down to verse 18. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men. This is where he was contrasting their situation with the world in which he lived. And frankly, when you read this, you see it's not all that dissimilar to the world we live in today. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hold the truth in unrighteousness. Because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it unto them. For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse, because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools and changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like to corruptible man and to birds and four-footed beasts and creeping things. Wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanness through the lusts of their own hearts, to dishonor their own bodies between themselves, who changed the truth of God into a lie, and who worshipped and served the creature more than the Creator, who is blessed forever. For this cause God gave them up unto vile affections, for even their women did change the natural use unto that which is against nature. And likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the women, burned in their lust one towards another, men with men, working that which is unseemly, and receiving in themselves that recompense of their error which was appropriate. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which they ought not. Paul has put his finger exactly on the nature of our problem in this country and in this world and in those countries which are of the same ethnic origins as we are. They don't want to retain God in their knowledge, and we can see in that the underlying cause is their sexual orientations are all messed up. And how much of our problems are oriented to, or are motivated, or are fired by that very same thing? How much of the political nonsense that goes on in this country is related to aberrant or deviant sexual orientations? It's a subtle component in so much of it. And the Apostle Paul identifies it. You see, the people who think like that, the people who go that way, want to get God out of the picture because there is that conscience element that they don't want to have to think about. They have to minimize God. They have to drive God out of the national consciousness in order to achieve their objective. The Apostle Paul saw it even in his day. But how much more appropriate in our day? And that's one of the reasons they won't teach our national heritage in grade schools. Our national heritage is jammed full of references to God. It's inescapable. So they have to minimize it. And they have to focus on. And it amazes me how many of these that I've seen. But looking back at the lives of our forefathers, Abraham Lincoln and Thomas Jefferson, and what they want to do is dig in and pull out all of their sexual improprieties. They found that Abraham Lincoln had a close male friend, and they make intimations there. And of course, Thomas Jefferson's supposed situation with one of his slave women. This is what they want to focus on. They don't want to focus on our national heritage and what's good and what's right. They don't want to focus on the virtues of our founding fathers. They've got to dig that up and diminish their stature in people's eyes. Have you noticed that? I've certainly noticed it. What institution do we have? Our government, our religions, our educational systems, our media? What institution do we have in this country that upholds righteous principles anymore? Maybe basically just one, and that is the Church of God. We can look to some degree to the religious world to uphold certain righteous principles, but not all of them. There's certain things they don't want to know. They don't want to know about the law of God. We can forget all that, according to them. That's legalism. We don't need that. So even in those areas, we've got some problems. In Deuteronomy chapter 28, there is a very potent chapter that should remind us of something that I think we like to forget. Certainly, this nation wants to forget. But in Deuteronomy 28, and it's most of the chapter, God points out something to us that we should never lose sight of. And it shall come to pass, if you shall hearken diligently unto the voice of the Lord your God to observe and to do all his commandments, which I command you this day, that the Lord thy God will set you on high above the nations of the earth. All these blessings shall come on you and overtake you, if you shall listen unto the voice of the Lord your God. Blessed shall you be in the city. And blessed shall you be in the field. Blessed shall be the fruit of your body and the fruit of your ground and the fruit of the cattle and the increase of your kind and the flocks of your and your sheep. Blessed shall you be your basket and your store. And that's an area you haven't heard much about lately. We're talking about our economic crisis. Nobody's saying much about our impending food crisis. Keep your ears open. Blessed shall you be when you come in and when you shall... Blessed shall you be when you go out. Verse 7, and the Lord shall cause your enemies that rise against you to be smitten before your face. And they shall come out against you one way and flee before you seven ways. That has been generally true up to the present time. The Lord shall command the blessing upon you in your storehouses, in all that you set aside hand unto, and shall bless you in the land which the Lord your God gives you. One conclusion we have to draw from this passage, and you can read the rest of it, there's a lot more to it. But the point is, our national blessings have come from God. And it is the intent, I think, of an overwhelming majority of our people, especially those in power right now, to forget that fact. Do we forget that fact? We tend to think, or our people want to think, that, oh no, this is all our own doing. But think about it. All our own doing has brought us to the economic situation we're in right now because of greed, corruption, ineptitude, various reasons in our major corporations. How can so many major corporations be so horribly run? How can so many get away with as much as they have? One man in New York City played a game for about 20 years, and he robbed more wealth out of the world than many nations' whole gross national product. How did that happen? Our government agencies that are out here picking through our doings with a fine-tooth comb are letting major things get right on by. They never noticed. Even when warned, they didn't pursue it. Our major institutions are not doing their job. As I was sitting reading, meditating before the Passover last week, my eyes happened to fall on Isaiah chapter 56. And at the time, I was struck by what I was reading because it is so appropriate. In fact, I was going to send it in to Bill O'Reilly, but it is so appropriate to our day and age. Isaiah 56, verses 9 through 12. And I was reading it in a New King James at the time, and I'm going to read it to you from the New King James. But I just want to see if this Old King James has the same heading. It does not. No. In my New King James, it had a paragraph breakdown, and the subtitle above that paragraph was Irresponsible Leaders. And here's how that passage reads in the New King James. All you beasts of the field come to devour. This is verse 9. All you beasts in the forest, his watchmen are blind. Our political strategists and watchdog agencies somehow can't see the obvious. They're all ignorant. They're all dumb dogs. They cannot bark. Dogs that we would expect would be giving us warning when an intruder is coming. Yeah, they'd rather sleep than bark. They're all dumb dogs. They cannot bark. Sleeping, lying down, loving to slumber. Yes, they're all greedy dogs which never have enough. And they're all shepherds who cannot understand. Boy, does that fit us to a T or what? They all look to their own way. What? Getting reelected, of course. Preserving their prestige. Everyone for his own gain from his own territory or from his own district, we could say. Come, one says, I will bring wine. And we will fill ourselves with intoxicating drink. Tomorrow will be as today. And much more abundant. Does that message sound familiar to you? That sounds like our politicians. Come on. I just thought that was so appropriate. Here God is talking about people with poor leadership and how it goes. And sure enough. Another assessment of the nation of Israel we can find in Isaiah chapter 42. Just over a few pages. And it seems our people throughout history are prone to keep going this way. But Isaiah 42, beginning in verse 21. Again, this is New King James. For the Lord is well pleased for his righteousness' sake. He will exalt the law and make it honorable. Well, already we're at odds with one of our major institutions. But this is a people robbed and plundered. All of them are snared in holes. What bigger trap is there than to have your money that you've salted away go down the drain? And they are hidden in prison houses. There are so many things we can't do. Even things that are right that you can't do and say. They are for prey and no one delivers. For the plunderer and no one says, restore. And that verse 22 sounds to me like a plea for conservatism. Sorry if this is a little too political. But here we're reading God's word. No one says, restore. Go back to where we were. We've lost some of our values. We need to fix certain things. No, there's nobody promoting that. Mm-mm. Nobody of any stature. Nobody who's going to do it. Who among you will listen to this? Who will listen and hear for the time to come? Talking about a future. Who gave Jacob for a plunder and Israel to the robbers? How are they going to plunder us? We've sold them our debt. And they're going to want to collect someday. What are they going to want to collect? All that oil in the offshore continental shelf that we won't touch? Are they going to want to collect that, for example? Other things could be. Who gave Jacob for a plunder and Israel to the robbers? Now, the question is, who did this? For they would not walk in his ways. Was it not the Lord, he against whom we have sinned? This goes back to the issue of God giving people national blessings. When we won't listen to God, when we won't go his way, there's another component at work. How long is God going to uphold the blessings that he's given to us? And how long before we lose them? Was it not the Lord, he against whom we have sinned? For they would not walk in his ways, nor were they obedient to his law. Therefore he has poured on him the fury of his anger and the strength of battle. It has set him on fire all around, yet he did not know. Didn't even know what's going on. The people don't even know that God has a hand in our prosperity. It has set him on fire all around, yet he did not know, and it burned him, yet he did not take it to heart. Now, there was an incident back before the fall of Sodom. And it's in Genesis chapter 18 that I think we would be well to ponder in light of our opening question. But this time, instead of reading it the way we usually read it, I want you to read it from another point of view. We usually read this with the thought of Abraham and his faithful family. Instead, I want you to think, what if you were an inhabitant of Sodom? And the Lord appeared unto him. This is verse 1 of chapter 18 of Genesis. And the Lord appeared unto him in the plains of Mamre. And he sat in the tent door in the heat of the day. And he lifted up his eyes and looked, and lo, three men stood by him. And when he saw them, he ran to meet them from the tent door and bowed himself toward the ground. And we know the story. These three men dined with Abraham. And this is one of the places where the issue of Abraham's heir was brought up. But let's move down to verse Well, we can read verse 19. Well, let's go to 18. Seeing that Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him, for I know him that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord to do justice and judgment, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he has spoken of him. And as a side comment, I might mention, many of the blessings that we enjoy are as a result of the promise made to Abraham. We are the heirs, physical heirs, of that promise. And of course, there's a spiritual component to it too. But in verse 20, there was an interesting exchange. And this is the one I want us to focus on. And look at this as though we were an inhabitant of Sodom, not necessarily of Abraham's household. Because there's an important question I want us to think about. Verse 20, and the Lord said, because the cry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grievous, I will go down now and see whether they have done altogether according to the cry of it, which has come unto me, and if not, I will know. And the men turned their faces from there and went towards Sodom. But Abraham stood yet before the Lord. And Abraham drew near and said, will you also destroy the righteous with the wicked? Now that question has relevance today. Peradventure, there be 50 righteous men within the city. Will you also destroy and not spare the place for the 50 righteous men that are therein? That be far from thee to do after this manner, to slay the righteous with the wicked, and the righteous should be as the wicked, that be far from thee. Shall not the judge of all the earth do right? And I think we know how the conversation goes. It turns out there weren't 50. And Abraham haggled and haggled and haggled, and he got it down to just a small number. I think it was 10. And turns out there weren't even 10 righteous people in the city. And we know what happened after that. But here's the thing, and here's the question. The righteous men that would have been or should have been in that particular city, what kind of a difference would the quality of their righteousness have made? Because I want to ask that question of us too. Is this a Christian nation? And I will say, yes, it is, only to the degree that the people of it are themselves true Christians. What kind of percentage are we talking about, really? Let's be honest with ourselves. It's pretty small. How long will God bless this nation? And my point to you is, I personally believe that God will bless this nation so long as His true saints are faithful. There's a danger in being Christian in name only, because it's not genuine. What should we be doing is the point. We should consider what value we represent in a corrupted world. God's blessings are based on His faithfulness to His promise made to His faithful servant Abraham like 3,800 years ago. The blessings that we enjoy today are in direct relationship to Abraham's faithfulness. Are we like Abraham? Are we faithful? Do we love the laws of God? Do we keep the laws of God? Do we have the faith of Abraham? Because that is the answer to our question. Are we a Christian nation? And is God going to continue to uphold the blessings to our people that He has in the past? Incredible things. The freedoms that we've had, the economy that we've known, the massive wealth that has been generated from this continent. Blessings of God. They're not going to stay if we're not going to keep faithful to God. We need to recognize it. So what do we do? In Matthew 5:13, it talks about our being the salt of the earth. And what happens when that salt has lost its savor? And my point to you is, we had better not lose that savor. Now, we can be Christian in name, or we can be Christian in fact. It's the Christian in fact that I want to emphasize. Do we have the same worth to God if we're dormant, if we're not doing anything? Personally, I feel that we ought to be doing something, not just being, but doing as well. Faith without works is dead. It's valueless. And it's the kind of faith that exists most everywhere. We can be different if we want to be. The question is, in our community, in our nation, would God even find 10 righteous or 50? How many does it take? What is that threshold? And can we afford to push the envelope? Can we afford to be lax? Can we afford to be disinterested? Can we buy into the stuff that is pumped out by our news media all the time, or our political leaders, or our educational institutions, or our religious institutions? Are we going to buy that stuff? Or are we going to seek out the truth and live by it? And when we have the answer to that, I think we will have the answer to whether or not we're a Christian nation. I might want to also mention, I have a thing here on climate change. Three articles that were sent to me on the internet. I was going to refer to it, but I think with the length of time, I'm not going to. It's available if anyone wants to read it, but there are some curious, interesting facts about so-called climate change that you're not going to hear anywhere in the media. So if you would like a copy of this, we can make copies, but it's very well documented, and it shows that CO2 is not the culprit at all. It has more to do with sunspot activity, and we're in a cycle right now that they're watching for cooling, and it's going to be interesting to see how long it's going to take the media to catch on to this and start reporting it. 1997 was the warmest year on record so far as the global warming crowd. It's been getting cooler ever since. The ice has grown more in the last 4 months than at any time in the last 50 years. Ice melting is not only related to temperature, it's related to, more directly related to, the amount of snowfall that falls every winter. And if there's less moisture in the atmosphere, less snow falls and less ice builds, so there is less to melt the following summer. When the earth warms up, more water evaporates. So there's a counterbalance built right in. Science is not talking about these kind of things. You might want to read about them, but I'll have these copies available if anyone would like it. It's titled Beware of the Climate of Conformity, and these are some very important, very well-known scientists who are writing books. One is Mr. Plimer, written by one of Australia's foremost earth scientists, Professor Ian Plimer. He wrote a book called Heaven and Earth. Australia's most eminent geologists. Most of what we have read about climate change, he argues, is rubbish. Big lengthy article about that. And the other one is Harvard astrophysicist Dr. Willie Soon, telling us that the Earth has seen a reduced level of sunspot activity for the last 18 months and is currently the lowest level seen in almost a century. And it's the activity of sunspots that has more to do with warming than CO2. CO2 is still rising while temperature is falling. Try and figure that out. But you might want to read these articles. But my point is, a lot of the stuff that they're pumping out, and they're going to tax you on this. You're going to get taxed for your carbon footprint. They're going to find new and inventive ways. But we need to be aware that this stuff is not the truth. So that's basically it. But here's the question is, we've got to keep in our minds, is what are we going to do? Are we true Christians? And will God prolong the life of this nation? And does it have anything to do with our faithfulness?